Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Scott Bratton on behalf of the petitioner in this case, Fahmy Liu. The instant case, like the last case, involves a petition for review of the agency's decision denying reopening based on changed country conditions in China. In this case, the petitioner, who is a mother of two United States citizen children, contends that the enforcement of the family planning laws in her area of China in Fujian province has increased since the time of her original asylum application, and as a result, she fears persecution in the form of sterilization and excessive fine if she returns to the People's Republic of China. In order to be granted reopening by the board, the petitioner in this case must show that the family planning policy is enforced more stringently than it was at the time of her prior proceeding, and that she has presented material evidence that was not available at the prior hearing to establish that there has been a change in conditions.
What is going to be, increased enforcement or a change in the law?
Increased enforcement or a change in the law would suffice in this case. In this case, we would submit that there has been increased enforcement in the family planning laws in the People's Republic of China. It was addressed by the Seventh Circuit in the Lin decision, as well as the Fourth and Eleventh Circuit decisions that we cited, addressing the almost same time period, the country report, the 2006 country report issued in 2007 versus the 2000 reports, showing that there has been increased enforcement in the People's Republic of China, specifically Fujian province. The 1998 profile, for example, states that the Fujian province was lax in enforcing the family planning policy, and that there were even media reports criticizing the lack of enforcement of the family planning policy in Fujian province. And the 2006 report we would submit shows that there has been increased enforcement, and that enforcement can be shown by the letter that was submitted in connection with the motion to reopen, stating that the government of China, the local government, knew that the petitioner and her husband had two children and that she was to report for sterilization and to pay a fine in this case. So I would submit, contrary to the contention of the immigration judge and the board in this case, that this isn't merely a rehashing of the same arguments that were made in her first asylum application that was withdrawn. This is based on evidence that could not have been presented previously, based on the fact that it was unavailable, the increased enforcement in Fujian province, as well as the letter that shows that there is increased enforcement and that they are specifically looking for her for sterilization and to impose a fine in her case.
Now, is this based on a letter from someone, or is there actually an official document?
The letter from the village committee that was submitted in connection with the motion.
Using her name.
Referencing the husband's name.
Husband's name.
Yes. And I believe that's at page 222, stating that they found out that she had a second child in excess of the family planning law, and asking to bring her to the family planning office for sterilization and to pay the social compensation fee of $2,000, which would double if it had not been paid, which in this case it had not been paid.
Now, does this letter acknowledge that she's not in the country at the present time, or they think she is?
I think that based on the letter, they think that she is. The reason that the letter was sent was that my client's husband applied for a permit to renovate their house, and on the permit listed the family members, including the two United States citizen children. So it appears that they do believe that my client is in the country, in the People's Republic of China, rather than in the United States.
Well, they wanted to bring her to the office for sterilization, didn't they? Isn't that what they said?
That's correct. And also to pay the fine.
And the board, thought that wasn't valid, wasn't authentic or something?
Well, the board stated a number of things with respect to the letter. The one thing that they stated that it was a poor copy, which, as I stated in my brief, I disagree with. They also stated that it wasn't authenticated, which it clearly wasn't. The original copy was submitted not to the circuit court, but in the husband's case to the agency. He submitted that to the agency in connection with a motion to reopen that he filed through another attorney.
That's the original, so to speak?
The original, yes, letter was submitted. And then this was a copy, translated copy of the original letter. The problem with authentication of documents in a case like this is it takes a significant period of time to authenticate documents. The hoops that, as private practitioners, we have to go through to get documents authenticated by the United States government, it would, if we could even do it, which I've yet to be able to do in a Chinese asylum case, it would take a very significant period of time. So that's one issue that we have with it. Also, the agency misreads the letter, stating that the letter does not indicate that our client would be forcibly sterilized if she would return. I think that the letter does state that. At the very least, it implies that if she doesn't pay this significant fine, that she would be sterilized.
Well, they focus on, I believe it's in this case, where they focus on change in personal condition, right?
In this particular case, there was not a change in personal condition.
Maybe I got mixed up with one of the other ones, but there's some focus on if somebody knew that they were going to get in trouble if they had two kids, but had two kids anyway, I guess. I don't know what the personal change is. Maybe that, but it's not an issue here in your case.
Well, in this particular case, the two kids were in existence at the time of the original filing, and our argument is that there's not a change in personal circumstances, there's a change in country conditions and increased enforcement in the People's Republic of China, and specifically in her province and area, which is evidenced by the fact that we did submit a letter showing that she specifically is wanted for sterilization.
Okay, I guess I thought that they were saying that there hasn't been a change in country conditions, it's a change in their condition, but apparently not.
They briefly addressed the personal circumstances, which I'm not sure why, because there hasn't been it's not a change of personal circumstances, it's a change of country conditions. And the analysis, or there's actually a lack of analysis of the change of country conditions, the decision just states that it's reviewed the document submitted and doesn't find that there's a change in conditions. And I believe that that's incorrect and shows that they never analyzed any of the documents. They didn't compare the documents from the first asylum filing, the 1998 profile, to show what the conditions were like at that time versus the documents that were relied upon in support of reopening in this case. So I believe that was erroneous as well. Just briefly, with respect to the Kukana case, in this case the government submits that the court lacks jurisdiction over this petition. We would submit that that's not the case, that legal issues have been presented in this case. One of the issues is with respect to the fine that was that the petitioner believes will be imposed if she is sent back to the People's Republic of China. In this case, the board states that country evidence reflects that fines or other means of enforcement which do not rise to the level of persecution or the enforcement mode for population control in China. First, we would submit that that's contrary to the evidence. But second, we would submit that it's inconsistent with prior board precedent in matter of TZ, where the board held that economic harm could constitute persecution in these cases depending upon the facts of the case. In this case, the board never looked at any of the facts of the case and seems to make a statement that the sanction that could possibly be imposed, which as this court has stated before, could be 10 times the level of a person's yearly income, is not cannot constitute persecution. So we would submit that the board in this case failed to follow their own precedent and precedent of this court and finding that economic harm cannot constitute persecution in this case. So we would submit that that's an error in this particular case, and that's a legal error which can be reviewed by this court and was addressed by the court in the Lin decision with respect to whether a fine could constitute persecution, and specifically a fine that's backed by sterilization, which I think at the minimum in this case is the question that's presented to the court.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Lauren Fassette, and I represent the respondent, the United States Attorney General. This court lacks jurisdiction over this untimely motion to reopen. This court's case law is clear that a motion to reopen is a discretionary determination, and the court will not review it review the facts, review the weighing of evidence, review any of the issues except for legal questions and constitutional claims. There are no legal questions or constitutional claims presented in this case. By way of background, the petitioner here entered in 1994, was put in removal proceedings, applied for asylum. At the time, she had two children, and in the year 2000, she, with the assistance of counsel, withdrew her asylum application that was in part based on her fear of the policy, the family planning policies in China at the time. Then she was granted voluntary departure for a year. She stayed past that year and for six more years, and on the seventh year filed this untimely motion to reopen, claiming changed circumstances in China. The board, in its decision denying her untimely motion to reopen, fully considered all of the evidence that she presented, including the letter from the village committee that was unauthenticated and as discussed, the board indicated a poor copy, and the board found that the letter, as well as the other country reports that she presented in her motion to reopen, did not establish changed country conditions. The board considered all the evidence. The board did not misapply its own case law. This is very similar to this court's decision in Lee, which was within the Huang case, where they discussed that the board's weighing of evidence of whether the evidence showed that there were changed conditions, whether there would be sterilization, all of those determinations were within the discretionary decision and would not be reviewed. This case is completely different from the Lin case, where this court found there was jurisdiction because the board had misapplied their case law. In that case, the court found the board had said specifically that sterilization that resulted because someone didn't pay a fine wouldn't be persecution. And the court found that was a complete misapplication of the board's case law. Here, that's not what the board said. The board said the evidence presented has just not shown that she will be sterilized, has not shown she will be persecuted, has not met the standard, and just has not established changed country conditions.
Now, the letter that they submitted was a copy. And the one which said that because of the two children, she has to show up for sterilization. The board said that wasn't authentic because it was a blurry copy or something?
Yes, the board said it wasn't authentic and then still analyzed it, though. And in weighing the evidence, the board found that that document, in conjunction with the other country conditions reports that she presented, all did not show enough to show changed circumstances. That's a factual determination by the board. There's no legal...
Change in circumstances from what?
In China.
Before we were... the other case, we were talking about something that was particularized mm-hmm. as opposed to a general condition. Now, this letter at least sounds like it's particularized. Maybe the letter's not authentic or something, but if you're just looking at that as a condition in China... How do we address the situation where it's addressed specifically to this particular person?
Sure. There is no rule or case law that says specifically, if your name's on a letter and it's a letter from the village committee, automatically change circumstances in China, change circumstances that shows a particularized risk. It's a subjective determination by the board. It's all weighing the evidence, and making factual determinations by the board. And so in this case, the board looked at the facts in this particular case and decided to whatever degree this letter was particularized, it wasn't enough to show that she would be subject to persecution and didn't show changed circumstances in China.
Well, is sterilization enough if you got a letter that's notarized or something, that is sterilization enough to show persecution?
Well, I can't answer that. Each case
Has
would be...
Has anybody answered it?
Well, it would really depend on the specifics of each case, and the board looks at the facts of each case separately and just weighs what that evidence shows.
Well, it's simple. Involuntary or forced or whatever, sterilization. Nobody's addressed this in China. We'll get by this issue of, well, this is a motion to reopen, we don't have jurisdiction and all that. If it were an asylum case mm-hmm. where someone proves it, maybe she escaped, and under threat of sterilization and left the country. Is that enough not to go back? Is that considered persecution to have forced sterilization?
It could be. It's for the board to decide in the first instance.
Never have, huh?
Well, in some cases, they have granted asylum based on these claims, but it depends on the credibility of the alien, the evidence presented.
But at least you're saying that in some cases where there's no question, it's forced sterilization, and that's persecution.
It could be. But in this case... First, the board found no changed circumstances. And second, any determination, any facts that they found en route to that determination, it ends in a discretionary denial of an untimely motion to reopen. So there's just no legal question presented in how the board weighed the evidence. There's no misapplication of law. This is just a disagreement with the weighing of the evidence, and that is not reviewable pursuant to this court's case law. So this court should dismiss the petition for lack of jurisdiction. If there are no further questions.
Yeah, let me ask you, not particularly about this case, but when someone withdraws an asylum petition, or it's denied, mm-hmm. and they're given voluntary departure, the option of voluntary departure, and it might be 90 days or a year or something like that, does the government track that to verify that someone has actually left?
I'm not specific of I'm not sure of the specifics, inner workings of the Department of Homeland Security and how they follow people. I think there's a massive amount of immigrants, and there.
Well, there is, sure. And here, this woman, 6 years after she was supposed to depart, hadn't done so, and then she filed this motion. Had she not filed this thing, no, I mean, she could stay here the rest of her life, couldn't she? I mean, as a practical
if not
matter.
Found, or, yes,
it's not
that's
found.
True.
As long as
and
she
it
doesn't
is a problem,
drive drunk or, do something that would have her come to the attention of anybody who would see that there was some sort of paper out there on her.
It is possible, but the granting of voluntary departure is a privilege. There is the board and the immigration judge consider the moral character. They have the person post a bond. They're trusted that they will leave within the time period, and to the extent they can be followed, they're followed, but there are a lot of people just not even getting voluntary departure that the government tries to remove.
If voluntary departure is a privilege, could the board have a rule that said if you do not voluntarily depart, as you promised, you have to promise to do that to get it, if you do not voluntarily depart, we will never reopen a case, regardless of country conditions or anything. Could the board do that?
I don't think the board, in the first instance, could make a rule like that. That would have to be in the statute or in the regulations. But if there were such a rule, then the board could certainly apply it, and it would apply in this case.
I mean, there's a lot of problems in this whole immigration system, as we know.
Yes.
Were highlighted in the last election. And I believe me, I don't profess to have any of the answers to it. So.
Well, in this case, the court lacks jurisdiction, so we'd ask the court to dismiss the petition for review.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you,
Counsel.
You have about a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. In this case, I don't believe that the court lacks jurisdiction over the case under the Kukana decision. I believe that there have been errors of law that were addressed, specifically with respect to the issue of the fine, like the Lynn case. I do not believe that the board followed prior board precedent in matter of TZ in assessing whether the fine that's set forth in the letter that references my client would rise to the level of persecution, which it clearly can under board precedent and precedent of this court. So I believe that this is a case where the board misapplied its prior precedent. As I stated previously, they didn't consider all of the evidence in the case, and I do believe that this court does have jurisdiction over this case, that there are errors of law, and that the petition for review that was filed by my client should be granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.